Comedy Film Nerds episode 476. Boom.
First one in August.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Ep 476. Yeah. I just had a big birthday.
Yep. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to 50. You know, 50 is the new 49.
No one's ever said that. Yeah. No one's ever said that. No one thought to say that. No one wrote it down and then didn't say it. No one said that ever. 50s and 49. So we're just saying numbers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about it beforehand. I was like, I don't.
AARP sends you a walker on your 50th birthday.
Sent me something in the mail. How dare they?
I wonder how much money it costs for them to get the Social Security database.
Yeah.
So they know exactly when you turn 50.
Exactly.
That's great.
And I still live like I'm in my 20s.
Well, that's a bonus that keeps you young.
I have no responsibilities. I went surfing this morning. Mm-hmm. I don't answer to anybody.
Nope. You're not responsible for anybody else.
Barely responsible for myself.
You have a YouTube channel.
I really am living like early 20s at best.
You argue about videos being demonetized.
I get mad about movies. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a guest. That's why.
But not for lack of trying.
Yeah, not for lack of trying. Yes. I tried numerous. Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of people just were not available.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
What was the most creative excuse you got?
Oh, I got a corporate gig.
Okay. In an unnamed state, in an unnamed location, for an unnamed amount of money.
They gave me, I got a corporate gig in Vegas, is what they said.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And this is a comic we're going to have on the show. So he gave me a, and I believe him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name names, but I don't think Jake Johansson would lie about about having a corporate gig.
Oh, wait, he lives in, no, he lives.
He lives here. He lives very close to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he came to my birthday party.
He did. I know. I'm sorry. I bailed.
You two assholes didn't. Yeah. We live in the valley. Now Jake could walk to my birthday party.
I don't believe I received an invite.
You were invited. Yes.
You're
on the e-vite. I put your email address in the
e-vite. Remember that conversation we had? And I said, are you going to Graham's party? And you said, no.
No. That never happened.
50 is the new 49, Aaron.
Yeah. You got to celebrate it the way you can.
You were on, I think you even RSVP'd.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I swear to God, I'm going to check my Evite when I open it up.
Okay.
So
it might be the wrong, if you miss a T in my email, like it goes to some guy in Kansas who has RSVP'd to a wedding.
Well, did he show up? The guy from Kansas?
He might.
There was a weird guy from Kansas there that everyone was calling Aaron.
So it's exciting, 50, staying young. Did you have pop sockets and Teddy Grahams at your party?
No, but I did have Batman napkins.
Nice.
So I was like passing around hors d'oeuvres. I'd like, would you like an hors d'oeuvre and a Batman napkin? Yes.
Signed.
Yeah. No, I did not autograph Batman napkins.
So, well, Graham, this is episode 476.
It is, Chris.
And it is the first episode in August, and we saw a much-anticipated summer movie this weekend, Fast and Furious Presents, Hobbs and Shaw. And I have to say, before we get started, I have to read you this rather lengthy but entertaining piece of trivia, because we were definitely discussing this before the movie, how there was some turmoil. On the set of Fast and Furious.
And before you read, we should also say that you and I both have grown to love how ridiculous this franchise has gotten.
Yes.
We love it. And now.
We don't take it nearly as seriously as apparently a few of the stars do. the idea of a Fast and Furious spinoff featuring Hobbs and Shaw first emerged during the filming of The Fate of the Furious after producers and studio execs took note of the comedic chemistry between the two throughout their scenes together. Plans to actually develop the spinoff were informally greenlit towards the end of filming, and they were later revealed to be the reason behind the much-discussed animosity that emerged between Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson in the final week of production, which resulted in Diesel reportedly canceling some of Johnson's scenes, which was within his purview as one of the movie's executive producers, perhaps, but also a dick move. And not showing up for filming at all on at least one day of production, leaving hundreds of cast and crew sitting idle. After news of the spinoff became public, co-stars Michelle Rodriguez and Tyrese Gibson publicly criticized it for damaging the Fast and Furious family, as well as pushing back the release of the series' ninth installment to at least a year. As of February 2019, Johnson has stated he will probably not return for Fast and Furious 9, but would consider it for the 10th in the series. So this is a completely convoluted, nonsensical, unnecessary, ego-driven debacle.
All right. You're Vin Diesel. You have more money than you could ever know.
Right.
You don't... your work...
This isn't even your only franchise. Oh, you've got the dumb Riddick ones, and you've got
the Triple X.
The Triple X, yeah.
What more do you...
Yeah.
Like, there's another Riddick movie... What do you care?
And it's a spinoff, and since you're a producer, you get paid anyway.
You get paid.
Yeah.
You should be like, yes, more residual income for me. What? How?
Here's another summer house.
How petty are you that you are like, no, man.
Yeah, I'm going to mumble.
I built this franchise on tank tops and mumbling.
Yeah.
So.
And if they do another Iron Giant without me, I'm going to be mad too.
God, what more do you need? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And the other thing, too, it's not even like this movie is taking the place of a Fast and Furious movie. It's just in addition to. The only thing I can imagine is that he's so insecure that he's afraid, oh, people are going to like them better, and then I won't be able to do any more of these. And then even if that were true, he's a producer anyway. It doesn't matter. Yeah, you're going to be in them or producing. You're going to be involved in one way or another. And I'm sure... If he wanted to do a cameo in this movie, he could have.
He could have.
Yeah.
You're the producer. You could just say, yeah, go have fun. Aren't you, don't you wake up and go, man, how many more of these can we make?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, great. I get a year off that I just get paid because they're making a spinoff. Then I don't have to do this for another year, but I'm still getting a salary.
I don't have to run around and have explosions and green screens. Mm-hmm. I can just.
Yeah, I can just eat my steroids and nobody bothers me. Like in a cereal bowl.
It's so ridiculous. And then I love that the FNF family, like, maybe Michelle Rodriguez and Tyrese are just like, well, there's no other work we can get. I don't know.
Or they might be like, well, we know we're not going to be in the spinoff. Yeah. So I'm not sure. They might have more of a gripe because they're probably not producers on the film.
Right. So they're losing money.
Yeah. But, this whole thing is like.
You're all
ridiculous.
Millionaires.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think. You think. You know, why are you picking a fight with The Rock? Oh, he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't.
No.
No. He did Rampage. He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He works out and he does action movies.
Yeah. He doesn't care if he's in Fast and Furious 9 or 10. It doesn't matter to him.
It doesn't matter to him. He's still not going to eat one carbohydrate.
Yes. Fast and Furious needs The Rock more than The Rock needs Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So this whole thing is so ridiculous, and it's such a Hollywood privileged problem. It's like it's beyond ridiculous, and it's not like they're making Shakespeare.
Oh God, I know. Give me a break. It's not like they're ruining the artistic integrity of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah, you ruined Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
Yeah,
no, HBO did that. No, but it's such a ridiculous argument. So I don't know what's going on, and what I would love to see, like, you know, the stories that are going to come out of the next Fast and Furious movie, like, was it tense on the set? Like, you know, TMZ, they're going to go nuts for like these stories that are ultimately nonsensically meaningless.
So silly. Also, I want to sit Vin Diesel down and go, have you watched
yourself 12
minutes? Well, there's that, but like, have you watched 12 minutes of the news?
Yeah.
Are you aware of anything that's happening outside of your mansion's compound?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's some shit happening out there that you might want to pay attention to that's a little more important than your crybaby multi-million dollar franchise.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it should be worded exactly like that.
Exactly.
Yes.
You can imagine, too, all these dipshit agents scurrying around. Yeah, there's a fight on the set. Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, we have to protect our assets and our investments and all this nonsense. So,
guys, he wants to be taken seriously as an artist. I mean, his name is Vin Diesel.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
you chose that. I doubt that's on a birth certificate.
No, I doubt it. So, I mean, great name for a Triple X character. Let's get into the actual film. Now, I was I was actually excited to see this because I've liked these movies.
Sure, they're fun.
And I was wondering, like, as I'm watching this movie, it was okay. Like, I didn't think it was as good as the other Fast and Furious movies, and which proves a really interesting point. First of all, how important the director is to set a tone for a film. Second of all, what an absolutely delicate balance that these movies have with being completely ridiculous and just popcorn fun movies.
Right.
And when that balance is off, thus suddenly the movie isn't as fun. And that's really kind of what happened with this movie. Like, I thought there were some really fun scenes and action and set pieces in it, but it went on too long and some of them were very uninspired. And the character, I don't expect, again, to bring back Shakespeare, I don't expect Shakespearean characters, but I expect a little bit more than something we've seen in the last 8 movies. So my expectations were very low, and they certainly weren't met, especially with Idris Elba, and I'm a huge fan of his.
Right.
And they literally gave him nothing to chew on. Like, and he could have chewed up that scenery from start to finish. And they just kind of, like, well, he's just kind of this robotic cyborg who's angry. And then they just throw in, like, these other cliches. Well, like, you know, Shaw was they were brothers in arms, and Shaw shot him at some point and then left him for dead. And then also, like, these weird science fiction elements, like, well, he shot him twice in the chest and one in the head, yet he's back, you know, but they just repaired his spine. What happened to his brain that you put the bullet in? Oh. You know, that's it. We don't have to worry about that.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah,
Chris.
Yeah. So I really felt like there was, it didn't feel like it had that, that wink and that nod that the other Fast and Furious movies have. Like, we know that you know how ridiculous these are. This one I really felt like, yeah, it's going to be ridiculous, but we want you to take it more seriously. And I'm like, no, I can't. So I thought it missed the mark a little bit. I thought it was okay, but I didn't like it as much as the other movies.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I really liked the movie. I went mm-hmm. in with, like, it gave me everything I wanted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a roller coaster. It had mm-hmm. a corkscrew and a thing and a loud, and there was lights, yep. and it was scary and crazy, whatever. Mm-hmm. I laughed.
Stuff blew up.
Stuff blew up.
People got punched.
People got punched. I laughed out loud a lot.
Yeah.
And I didn't... I liked Idris Elba's... it was a good bad guy, but you do bring... I hadn't considered it until you brought up the point that, wow, they could have given him a little more to do.
For sure.
And... you know, that bad guy character kind of could have been played almost by anyone.
Right.
Which
right.
is a waste of Idris Elba.
Yeah, exactly. When you cast Idris Elba, use Idris Elba.
Yeah, that's a good point. Otherwise, though, I mean, I had a blast. I saw the movie with Micah Wright, who we've had mm-hmm. on this show.
Yeah.
And I went to the new Alamo Draft House in downtown LA, mm-hmm. which I've never been to before. Man, they got an amazing salad.
Nice.
And so we had a fun time. I hadn't seen him in Mike in forever, and we just laughed our asses off and had a great time. And so I just had an absolute blast. The Jason Statham and Rock each doing the things that those two guys do one thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's all they do. Mm-hmm. And they're very good at it. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, Rock is just Big Rock, and Jason Statham is just all right, mm-hmm. you know, and that's it. They just mm-hmm. go around and they do that, and I had a blast. And
you know,
and
they're going to yell at each other and insult each other, and that's fun.
That's fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the, like, team, you know, you got to work together as a team, and mm-hmm. at the end when they fight, they go to the Samoan island. I loved all that.
Yeah.
I
By
love,
the way, that scenery was amazing. Like, made me want to go to Samoa.
Yeah, I think they shot it in Hawaii. But
most likely.
But I, you know, I had a blast, and I think, too, I'm reminded, Micah reminded me of this. He goes, you know, in the very first movie, they were stealing DVDs.
Yeah.
Now they're international black op spy CIA.
And every movie gets a little more retcon exactly what they were. Like, you know, The Rock was part of this government agency that was made up, and now he's, like, working for the CIA, and now they're loaning him out, and, like, all this weird stuff.
MI6 and whatever else.
And Shaw especially. They they really retconned him. He was like a brutal villain in like the last couple ones. And now he's like, well, wait, he's MI6. No, he's special ops. Now, wait, how many things? And now he was like forced to kill his bro. What's going on?
Oh, they just rewrote that. Spoiler alert. They he had to.
Yeah. Oh, now he's not such a bad guy. He was a great bad guy.
He was a great bad guy. Yeah. But then I love that his mom is Helen Mirren and she's in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, keep stunt casting it.
Yeah.
Go full Expendables on this thing. Mm-hmm. And we walked out of there and we went, man, they made a Fast and Furious movie without Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Walking around going, family. Yeah.
He's not critical to the franchise.
That's really, you need quips and action.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, Aaron, did you see this?
I would not.
Why not?
I can't get on board with you guys. I mean, I don't care how over the top these things are. It's a waste of time.
Did you ever like any of them?
No.
So you're unable to do the suspension of disbelief required for these films.
Yay.
Okay. That's fair enough. For everyone.
They're not.
I've never been into what Vin Diesel's offering. My favorite thing of him in any movie is when he gets shot in Saving Private Ryan. Spoiler.
Honestly.
Spoiler alert.
His best movie is still The Iron Giant.
I even fell asleep during that.
Oh,
I watched it recently. Yeah.
Just his voice puts you to sleep.
It's very soothing.
His Groot acting
from a giant.
His Groot acting is 100%.
His Groot acting is fantastic.
Yes. Groot acting. You can't.
It's another franchise.
That.
Look, how much money do you need, dude?
Enough.
You're Groot.
You're in a Marvel movie.
What did you have to do for Groot? You had to show up and record the word Groot 7 times, and you left, and then you get to go to the premiere.
And you get residuals for the next 100 years.
Yeah, and every time they sell a Groot toy, you probably get a penny or something like that.
So, and one of the interesting trivia things, too, I was reading, Brixton's suit, that's Idris Elba's character, has a Weyland Yutani symbol on the right collarbone. And I was watching this movie, and I'm thinking, that looks really familiar, but I couldn't place it. It's
from the Alien franchise.
It is. He starred as an employee of the Weyland Yutani in Prometheus. So it's like they were going to call back to, like, that's kind of the same company that would eventually create the Prometheus in the Alien.
Oh, the evil company that he's working for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that they're going, you know, they went from stealing DVDs and drag racing for pink slips to this, like, building a master race with some crazy, you know,
James Bondy type.
Cyberdyne.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've gone full on into science fiction at this point, you know, when they, spoiler alert, this is in the trailer, though. He's half cyborg, you know, at this
point. Oh, yeah, he had superpowers.
Pretty much.
He was impervious to regular human stuff. It was just like...
When he put at the beginning of the film, he puts his hand up to stop bullets. Like, really? So you're able to figure out where they're aiming at the same time, too?
Sure.
And yeah, but then he goes, well, my suit is bulletproof, too. Well, then why do you need to put your hand up?
Yeah, because I...
It looks cooler. You know,
yeah,
it does look cooler.
It's like a stop sign.
I can't say it didn't look cool.
And I also, most franchises like this, I would get so mad at this, like, oh, that's so sloppy and dumb. But the fact that this one just doesn't care.
No.
Mm-mm. They're just like, explain it.
Yeah, physics, no.
Physics, no. Just, he's got a spacesuit. They've ejected it into his thing. Is that possible? Of course it is. There, he can stop bullets.
Another cool Easter egg was, when Shaw walks through his collection of cars and he passes a Mini Cooper saying he used that for a mission in Italy, of course, from the Italian job.
Right.
And it's like, and I think there was probably a missed opportunity to try to see The Rock try to fit in that car. Would have been kind of funny.
Right.
Are they creating a multiverse? A cinematic universe?
Yeah, this is a Fast and Furious cinematic
Prometheus,
multiverse.
Yeah. Italian job, multiverse. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Those all match.
Yeah, and then maybe they'll chase the mummy and Tom Cruise in the next one in their cars.
Oh, that's so great.
So that's it. It's, nobody, I think, went into this movie, we've said this before, going, wow, that was not at all what I expected. What a bait and switch this movie was.
I gotta say, so I saw it like last Thursday night or something like that. It was packed house.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone there seemed to be like in for the... This is the Alamo Draft House, which is showing indie films. It's very like, they have these strict rules. The first one I ever went to was in Austin where they started. And I did a couple like Doug Benson movie interruptions around the country, which are and they run it like, you show up past 10 minutes into the trailers, you can't come in.
Right.
You talk, you're kicked out. Like, you're on your phone, you're gone. Like, they are hard, and it's a great movie experience. They also, I've been to several different chains of companies that do wait staff serving food.
Right.
And some of them, the wait staff is a little intrusive. Man, they train these people like goddamn Navy SEALs. They slide in, they get your order, they deliver it.
Actually trained.
They're trained. Mm. They're not just like, and they put lights underneath your tray so you can read the menu in the dark without having to pull out your phone or do anything great, like that, which is really brilliant.
Well, they've thought it through.
They've really thought it through. They have a great process. They got that thing down. I will say this. They had not a recliner. They had a thing that, you know, footrest, but then it didn't recline back. There's other chains where the seat goes back. So
now, do those other chains have food and a reclining?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe they're afraid of people spilling their food on a recliner. I don't know.
I don't know.
Or sleeping.
Or falling asleep. Maybe that's it. But I'm glad there's an Alamo Draft House in L.A.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's a good chain.
Yeah.
So, all right, Graham. So now you saw a documentary on Lance Armstrong.
Yes. This one came out in 2014 called Stop at Nothing. And I know there's been several of them. And obviously we all heard about it a little bit, you know,
sure.
But I never really went into the specifics and I just started watching this, man. It's hard not to look at that guy and go, wow, he's a sociopath. Like
for sure.
He just was a crazy liar. Mm-hmm. And then when the house of cards started to collapse, he then doubled. This is what other he didn't just finally go, I can't live with a lie anymore, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. He doubled down on defending and lawsuits and suing people and smearing people.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy.
He went on the attack.
He went on the attack. And, you know, you watch him in interviews and stuff, and you watch all the people that were around him. And he did that thing of, you know, you accuse me with facts. I don't refute your facts. I say you're crazy. You know, I say you're the problem. You know, he did that. He called people crazy. He called this one woman, who was like his masseuse. Like they had this whole, and all these people were, a lot of people are complicit. So they can't, they can all, yes, blame him to a certain extent. But some of these people, like, you knew and you went along with it.
Right.
Because the gravy train was rolling. The money was coming in and he
paid to look away.
Yeah. So you can't sit there and say, oh, big bad Lance.
Yeah.
But, you know,
there one specific whistleblower that started the House of Cards falling, or was it just kind of like a bunch of little dominoes?
It was a bunch of little dominoes. There was one reporter that was really staying on it. But, you know, they went back. He was doping before he got cancer. There's this hospital room event that several people talk about. When he first got diagnosed with cancer, and the doctor said, I need to ask you some questions. And like one of his writing mates and the writing mate's wife and one other person were all in the room. And they were like, do you want us to leave so you can talk to your doctor privately? He goes, no, I got nothing to hide. And the doctor said, you know, because it was like, why is a guy in this great a shape getting cancer? And the doctor said, have you ever done any performance-enhancing drugs?
Mm-hmm.
And Lance Armstrong listed off all these drugs he had done. And they're like, oh, that's probably one of the reasons the cancer happened. So then when he came back from the cancer treatments, he just doubled down on, I got to get back to win.
Mm-hmm.
And worked with this guy, Ferrari, that was like a known doping doctor, you know. And they had this, you know, this system. You know, he was always like, I'm the most tested guy ever. And, you know, I'm innocent, because he knew how to skirt the system. They did blood transfusions. I mean, crazy shit.
To avoid the blood tests?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was nuts. And then to watch it all come down, and then you see these, you know, depositions that were on video. This, I think it all started to unravel around 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you see, he looks like a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
He looks crazy. And everyone, and you see how everyone wanted to believe it. I even was like, wow, this guy came back from cancer. And I remember thinking, like, I really want to believe that he did this on his own. But you know, there was just too many. And there's all these little things like people within the cycling community. When he first went the first Tour de France he was in after he came back from the cancer, and there's that one, I forget the name of it, but like he's going up that long mountain pass, right? And someone was watching, and Greg LeMond was like, he's not breathing heavy. Greg LeMond was like, he's not breathing heavy. And somebody sitting next to Greg LeMond goes, a French guy said in French, oh, he's on the juice.
Oh, really?
Because that's one of the things it does is it increases your blood flow and all this other stuff so that you just, and it was really.
What was like, I guess, what was the tone like of the documentary? Like, was it like we're going to give you all the information, you can make your own conclusion, or like, here's what you don't know about this story? Like, what
is that? It's the latter. Here's what you don't know about the story. Like you, and I think I'm probably sort of the perfect viewer of this. Like, I kind of know, I know he was eventually kind of guilty, but I don't know the specifics. I don't know the inner workings of the U.S. Postal Service team, his friends, the people that came out against him, how he smeared them. I didn't know that. I just saw some interviews periodically, or, you know, they talk about it on SportsCenter, whatever, but I didn't know all this stuff that he did. And that's really the angle. The angle is like, we all know he's guilty.
Right.
Here's how. We're going to show you how it got this way.
Right.
Which I think was an interesting, and I think it is the stance to take, because he's guilty. He did it. It's not disputable.
It's already been proven.
Yeah. So do the thing that a good documentary does, which is show me stuff I didn't know. Show me stuff that wasn't in the regular news interviews and clips and stuff like that. And get me people, you know, in whatever, 2013 or 2014, talking about 98, 99, 2000, 2001, like to have them tell me, well, at the time I didn't realize, or I thought this, or I thought that, you know, like that stuff's interesting. And then stuff I didn't know at all. Greg LeMond, when he finally just told the truth, he lost money. Cause he was Greg LeMond. So he won the Tour de France in 89. He won in the mid 80s and then won again in 89. And he was the first ever American to win it in the 80s, which was a big deal. And so it was 10 years later. Greg was already sort of retired, but he was in the cycling world. He was selling. He lost millions of dollars in like businesses because no one wanted to come near him because Lance went on the attack. Attacked Greg and his wife. And to see Greg LeMond and his wife today talk about that, it was like how much pain they were put through. And like, I didn't know any of that. I didn't know LeMond had much to do. I maybe kind of, you know, I'm not a big cycling enthusiast and I didn't follow this story very closely. So that stuff. And then also knowing that Lance is guilty and lying, and you see him lie in all these interviews. And anytime he's...
Does he have a tell? Well, like, that's, you see like that, a twitch or something?
Well, that's the thing that's kind of crazy is like it's like a sociopath believes it.
Right.
You know, like a regular person, the guilt and all that stuff, they have a physiological, like you say, a tell. They have a physiological reaction. Lance didn't seem to have that. And then you watch how he would go on the attack and everything. So it's a really fascinating documentary.
Oh, cool.
You know,
check it out. It's on streaming?
Yep, streaming. Stop at Lance Armstrong, stop at nothing.
All right. Well, Graham, today we have a sponsor.
What?
Yep, Eero, the Wi-Fi people. So I've had some bad Wi-Fi in the house, and the Wi-Fi was okay, but would just never reach the entire house. So I always had that problem, especially getting into the kids' rooms. And now that they have, as they get older, they...
In the garage.
In the garage, yeah. So it was never like... There was always like dead spots in the house they could never quite reach. That's why Eero is really great. It blankets your whole home with fast, reliable Wi-Fi, eliminating poor coverage, dead spots, and buffering. Because what they do is they have like a main unit, and then they have these what are called beacons. So you set them up and plug them in outlets, and then they cover the rest of your home. And what's great about it is that you can use and set up the entire Wi-Fi system with your iPhone. So you just download the app, it connects right to the router and the beacons, and you can set it up, and it's so easy. It's always a hassle with setting up Wi-Fi because you've got set up the router, You got to hope it works. You got to see what kind of coverage you have. And then you always have to update the firmware. Eero does that all automatically, which is great. And it tells you where there's coverage, where there isn't. And it tells you to move the beacon or it's okay where it is. So it was really, it's a really great system. And it'll get you coverage through your house. Because even if, like, you have a dead zone, you just add another beacon and a plug. And the plugs also have little, the beacons have little night lights on them, too. So they're even good, like, if they're in a hallway and it's at night, they have, like, little lights on them, too, which is great. So, but here's the thing. We are not going to let you pay full price.
You we can would never do that, too.
No, of course not. You can go to Eero.com/comedy and enter the code comedy at checkout. And get free overnight shipping with your order. That's Eero.com/comedy, code comedy at checkout to get the Eero delivered for free overnight with overnight shipping. You have to use this URL to receive this offer. So Eero.com/comedy and use the code comedy. And it's great. No more Netflix buffering, no more kids complaining their Xbox isn't getting a signal. And or, you know, a lot of you too have security cameras and you don't want them to be offline. You want to make sure they have coverage. So check it out, Eero. And Graham, we have some Patreon sponsors
too. Oh, I love the Patreonies. The Patreonics.
I was like the first Patreon of the month because that's when people kind of send in their little tweaks and changes, and sometimes we get new Patreon sponsors. But see if you can guess which Patreon copy has changed as I read it, because you've been paying attention the last four or 5 months.
Of course,
right?
I have, Chris.
Yes, okay. All right, Johnny Roulon.
Johnny.
He's promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital form and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. Website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comic news, your movie news, TV news, and interviews with industry insiders and artists, fanboyplanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com, coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. Shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Check out alicefrazier.com with an S. And the Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves and find our own art in life. New episode with John S. Drew, host of the Shazam Isis Podcast, Bat Cave Podcast, and more. Theartpodcasts.com with an S. And the gritty Australian noir, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks, pits small-town Australian PI Dan McGuinness against corporate greed and corruption. A Sydney surgeon hires Dan to find her husband's killer. The cops think it was a mugging gone bad. She thinks it was a hit. More info at tonymcfadden.net/JB. tonymcfadden.net/JB.
I could not tell you which one was different.
There were two that were different. It was really? The art and the Australian noir, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks. Yep, different descriptions. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, Graham, I think we should get to some very interesting trailers.
Well, before we do that, I want to ask Aaron, have you seen any movies lately, Aaron? What have you seen?
The last thing I saw was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Ah.
So that it would not be spoiled.
Ah.
Because
that was smart.
And yeah, when I walked out, I was like, I'm glad I saw that before the spoiler up, because, man.
Yeah, we would have spoiled it for sure.
Some movies we've done in here, I'm like, I'll figure out how they got there. It's fine. This one was like, holy shit. Yeah, I needed to see this before.
And did you like the film?
I did enjoy it.
Did you fall on the Mike Schmidt side of it or my side of it?
Definitely the Schmidt side of it. I don't know. I definitely wanted to talk about it as soon as I got outside, because I was like, the marketing and the trailer and everything that I'd seen up to that point did not match the movie I saw, but I still appreciated the movie I saw. Like,
right.
I can still give him that. Like, I don't, and I don't mind when movies go a different direction than what I thought, as long as the marketing prior to, like, the trailer doesn't just completely throw me for a loop. This one kind of did, but it's Tarantino. I kind of expect that to some degree versus like something like The Last Jedi, which took all these turns I didn't expect. And I loved it. I'm happy to see that. Happy to be surprised at this point in my life.
By anything.
By anything. Yeah. Particularly in film, where it's just, it can always be the same thing over and over.
All right.
Okay.
That's a fair assessment.
So now we've got a couple interesting trailers. You know, there's been a couple of like second trailers that for movies we've already talked about. I didn't want to go there. I wanted to go to two movies that may not be on your radar as of now because they look really, really interesting. One just looks like it's made for people that only like art house movies. And the other one is really angling for some Oscar bait. So let's check it out. First, let's start with...
1917.
We'll do 1917. First, we'll start with 1917. Guess who's in it? Benny Cumberbatch, but not as a codebreaker.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
He's one war before now.
I was going to say the Kaiser.
Yeah. This is where he finds a Nazi monster. No, that's Overlord. No.
Overlord 2.
The prequel. Now, Sam Mendes. Great director. Also did a James Bond movie, if you remember. Maybe more than one. A
couple, yeah. Skyfall and...
You have a brother in the second battalion.
After one.
Yes, sir. Is he alive?
And with your help, I'd like to keep it that way. But they're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you don't, we will lose 1,600 men. Your brother among them.
A lot of movies about the Britons making poor tactical decisions and having to be saved.
Yeah.
There's only one way this war ends.
World War I was so horrific.
Last man standing.
What the hell are you doing, Lance Corporal? No! No! No!
I mean, cinematically, you couldn't ask for a more perfect, like, ticking clock.
If you fail... it will be a massacre.
Those are the stakes. That's the time. That's the ticking clock.
Wow, am I in?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Is that Colin Firth in the shadows?
Yep, it is. Sam Mendes during a World War I movie?
Yes.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. That's all
I need. The trailer alone, 7 million
hits.
Hits, yeah. Reviews.
It's so, yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm really looking forward to it, and it's definitely one that, like I said, it's really positioned for Oscar attention.
Oh yeah, it's so we're getting into late summer, mid. Yeah. Well, we're in the middle of the summer, but this is going to come out in October-ish or November, whenever it said it's going to come out, and it's going to do.
This next one is so pigeonholed that's, but not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. This is like art house, creepy, weird thriller horror. Fans like this last movie he made was The Witch, which was really creepy and disturbing. Mm-hmm. So you'll barely recognize the two stars in this movie, but then you go, oh my god, is that
this is The Lighthouse?
Yes, The Lighthouse, and it's in black and white.
Oh, fantastic.
Tell me, what's a timberman want with being a wiki?
Willem Dafoe,
yep.
Just looking to earn a living, just like any man. Starting new.
On the run.
Like the cinematography, yes. Like, yeah, I love black and white cinematography.
No, sir.
Watch you spill your beans. Watch you spill your beans.
It's a two-man black and white lighthouse horror movie where someone's having a hallucination with a squid.
5 weeks? 2 days?
help me to recollect.
Yeah. Two for two on the trailers, I'm going to have to say. I'm in.
And ones that, like I said, probably weren't on your radar.
At all.
Yeah, The Lighthouse is just is one of those movies, too, that this is what indie film is made for. You put two stars in a creepy, weird situation. You have great black and white cinematography. This is exactly, like, no studio would have touched this with
a 100-foot pole. No, creepy music.
Yeah.
Weird, long shots with shadows.
Yeah, and squids.
Squids. So, squids and shadows.
Yeah. So definitely, definitely on board. And Aaron, this is the one I want to hear a story about this. Like, well, how did you get this one funded? Well, who came on board for first? Was it Robert Pattinson? Was it Willem Dafoe? And then you got the rest of the money on their name. Like, how did this one come about?
Something like that.
Yeah.
What do you think of these movies, Aaron?
Well, I mean, a World War One movie, I feel like we haven't seen enough of it quite yet. It hasn't been overdone like, you know, some of the other movies. I've got kind of a high bar on it because I love the movie A Very Long Engagement. It's done by the director of Amelie. It was his follow-up. It's great, and it's super gritty about World War One and trench warfare. But I'll see it. I don't know if I trust Sam Mendes as much as you guys sound like you do.
Mm.
I don't know. Jarhead was kind of a miss, I think. You know, Revolutionary Road or Revolution Road, whatever that was kind of like, okay.
Okay.
And
the Bond movies.
You can't fault them for the Bond movies.
Yeah.
I get Revolutionary Road. I wasn't a huge fan of that. But the Bond movies, you can't fault anybody because you're plugged into this Bond thing.
That's true.
And they tell you, do these things, have him hold a Heineken bottle. You know, like it's so out of his hands.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, even looking back at American Beauty, it's just like...
I was going to say American Beauty.
You didn't like American Beauty.
In hindsight, I don't know how I feel about it.
Well,
you have to watch it. I have to watch it again to really know.
At the time, did you like it?
It was all right. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know if it holds up.
So you're just not a Sam Mendes fan?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Maybe not. I don't know.
You pretty much rattled off all his movies and how you're mediocre on them. So I would say, it's an accurate assessment.
It's definitely not. Yeah. It's definitely not. Seeing him in the trailer, his name in the trailer was not like, I can need to. But, you know, it still looks good.
From the director of Charlie's Angels.
If it's got a Cumberbatch, if it's got a Cumberbatch in it, I'm going to go see it at this point.
Yeah. Benny Cumbo and World War I outfits.
Yeah.
And a mustache saying, everything will always own your heads or whatever. That's not how he sounds like at all. And there's not even a line from the movie. I don't know what I just said.
The Lighthouse could be different in like the way you might just have to sit through some parts where it's not so fun to watch.
I bet you Lighthouse is going to be something that you just absolutely have to see in the theater.
Yeah.
And completely uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted. Yeah. You have to go like quiet, sit there. Like you have to see it in that capacity. Otherwise, it's not gonna work.
Sure. I just don't know if I'm that interested in it.
Right.
All right.
I mean, I like both the actors. I really do, actually. But I don't know.
Mm.
I didn't like The Witch that much. How did you guys feel about it?
I liked it. I thought it was a real creepy, interesting story, and it did disturb me for like a good horror movie. Like it wasn't gory or really gross, but it was that kind of psychologically disturbing horror. So I thought it was pretty effective for a horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm one of those people who wasn't that impressed with Hereditary, so I don't know.
Oh, it's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of the few.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, Dafoe being creepy, though.
Yeah.
You know.
Dafoe and a weird beard and a black and white creep film.
I mean, every movie he's one step away from a creep, being creepy anyway.
You make any of the movies he's in black and white, he's suddenly creepy.
Yeah, very easily. All right, now on DVD and Blu-ray this week is Pokemon Detective Pikachu. Now, I will say this was better than expected. It was a good kids movie. I wouldn't call it a family movie unless you grew up watching Pokemon.
Right.
But it was a good kids movie. Both my kids liked it, and also Neil and I also liked it. And Ryan Reynolds doing a weird Deadpool for kids as Detective Pikachu was kind of fun. So... and then the next one is the horror movie, The Curse of La Llorona.
La Llorona.
She's coming for your children.
La Llorona.
So,
you're bad, Lala Rona will come for you.
I don't know how well this movie did, but I can guarantee you it made its budget back. So I'm sure it did okay.
Yeah, in the Latino community alone, I'm sure it was huge.
Oh, it was huge in the Latino community.
Yeah, yeah. It's their Bloody Mary. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can imagine there'll probably be some kind of weird spin-off sequel.
Yeah, for sure.
If you don't do Patreon, Lala Rona will come for you.
And Tolkien, as it was the other movie, this one was a real missed opportunity. I was very disappointed with this film. I was hoping it would be, what's the word I'm looking for? Good?
Yeah.
And it was not.
The fact that you were utterly disappointed by this film was very telling. Yeah.
And it was a lot of the Tolkien fans were also very disappointed. And it was the thing that was so frustrating about it was such a missed opportunity. Like if Peter Jackson had gotten this on his hands and would have done this. I mean, he was probably done with the Tolkien universe. He did 6 movies. I think he's done. But
he's doing a show, I think, for Amazon as well. Lord of the Rings universe show.
Oh, he is.
I believe.
So, you know, I could see how he would be done, but I was thinking how great it would have been if he would have done it, because not only is he a big World War One, almost like a historian, he knows so much about World War One. He was a huge Tolkien fan. He knows his writing inside and out. He could have really mixed what the writer's intention was with his biography, with what shaped him, and have that insight that only Peter Jackson could have had. And the filmmakers had pretty much zero insight. In fact, I remember when we were talking about the movie, the Tolkien estate like completely disavowed this film, and they had nothing to do with it and wanted to know that they didn't endorse it or anything. And you could tell it clearly they weren't interviewed. They weren't, there was no, there, like, again, missed opportunity. There's a whole Tolkien family you probably should have talked to before making this film. So it was a disappointment, but I will say this. I mean, I hope it doesn't kill the idea that somebody could make a great Tolkien biography, because I think the door is still wide open, and I think the fans would, like myself, would embrace one that was done properly.
Right.
So, and the site spotlight, want to make sure you guys know that the Thrilling Adventure Hour stuff is now done. Thank you so much for the support. Now, I want to let you guys know, not all those orders have gone out yet. We are still filling them because we did get slammed with a bunch of the closeout orders. So I want to let you guys know they will be filled this week, and they will be going out, all the posters, DVDs, and T-shirts. So they are in the works. They are on the way.
Thank you, everybody, for supporting that.
Thank you for the support, and thank you for your patience. So, and premiering this week, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. This is based on a book, I believe.
It's a book series.
And Guillermo del Toro is actually one of the writers for the film. At first, I thought it was like a Goosebumps kind of thing. Like, where is this like one of those horror things for kids? And it doesn't look like it.
No,
it's
definitely more scary. Yeah, yeah, I read these as a kid.
It is PG-13, but it definitely looks like it's more of like a Grudge PG-13, like an adult PG-13. The next movie is The Kitchen. This is the, what was that movie that came out about the wives of the criminals? Widows.
Yeah.
Basically, it looks like Widows in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And although it's weird to see anything.
It's a Hell's Kitchen Widows period piece because it takes place in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah, 70s.
Oh, it's great. It's always weird to see any reference to Hell's Kitchen without Daredevil in it. So I hope they do some kind of weird Easter egg.
I'd like to see someone shoot something in Hell's Kitchen and not mention it every other line.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty great. The good thing about this movie coming out this week is that I don't have to see the trailer again.
Yeah.
Or something else.
Yeah, I think the movie I want to go see that's already out, it's in limited release, is The Farewell.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a trailer for this, and it looks really fascinating. It's based on a true story, and I heard an interview on NPR with the director. She's Chinese-American. I think, you know, she was born in the States, and her mom grew up in China, I believe, and her father did too, whatever, and her grandmother is sick. But no one told her.
Oh.
And it's really this, like,
no one told the
grandmother.
The grandmother that
she's sick.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, why won't you tell them? And it really, in the trailer, it's very much like, this is the difference between East and West cultures. You know, someone even says in the trailer, like, in the West, you think your life is your own and you're an individual. Mm-hmm. No. In the East, it's you got to think about the whole family and the whole community. It looks really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
So.
As someone who kind of just went through this with my father, like.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moral quandary to it that you just never hope you have to face.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then the last one is Dora and the Lost City of Gold. Now, I am happy that my kids are old enough now that neither wants to see it. So, because this was a really interesting strategy for a Dora live-action movie. Because if you watch the trailer, you realize that they've aged her up considerably from the actual cartoon character. Because it kind of makes sense. Because the kids that watch Dora as a kid are now older. So they would want to see an older version of Dora. So I really feel like this is some kind of weird... almost like a Jumanji they're trying to tap into with like that kind of jungle adventure and, you know, hidden cities of gold and, but with Dora and, that those kind of things that they grow up with. Like, but, I think what probably will happen this weekend is, I'll take my daughter and, one of her friends probably to see Scary Stories.
Nice.
And we'll see that this weekend. So, any interest in the kitchen, Graham?
Yeah, man.
I don't really either.
Didn't that first trailer for it that we saw here on the show, didn't it play it more as a comedy?
Yeah, it felt
everything like I've seen since has been so serious.
Yeah.
I feel like they, and that's very scary to me that they don't know what the tone of the movie is.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Widows, I had a blast at. Widows was, when Widows came out, it was great. And not that I don't like these actors in the kitchen, but I feel like that's what I'm guessing from these two different trailers is that that means there's a tone problem.
Yeah,
for sure.
Or it shifts, or they don't know what it is, or it's going to suddenly, in the middle of the movie, all of a sudden it's going to get wacky after some heavy scene or something, and you're going to go, what? You know, so I don't know. Or maybe it is a serious movie, but because it's got Melissa McCarthy and Tiffany Haddish, they got to cut a comedy version of the trailer, which...
To catch the comedy fans, like, oh, look, they'll say something funny towards it at some point.
Which, is again, does the movie a disservice,
because
maybe
it
is a good movie, and they cut that version of the trailer, which makes it look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell, and I don't know if I'm going to see... I feel like I got to wait to hear what people say and maybe see it on a plane.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Do you think someone in the movie says... Hey, you ladies, stop trying to be mobsters. Get back in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm sure that's got to be like...
I'm surprised it didn't make it into the trailer.
Yeah, there's a line or two like that in the trailer where I'm like, is the whole movie this? Like,
right,
yeah.
Now you wear the apron, bitch. Yeah. You know, all right. So, yeah, I'm going to see The Farewell.
Yeah.
What are you going to see, Aaron?
This weekend, I just have to catch up on so many shows on Netflix. Apparently, The Boys is really good.
Well, that's Amazon.
Amazon, yes, you're correct. I meant streaming services in general, much like Kleenex is a brand name for facial tissue.
By the way, Southerners call all soda pop Coke.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want a Sprite Coke? all right. Well, I guess that's it, man.
That is our show.
476, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some tour dates coming up. I will be doing a progressive comedy tour with Ron Placone in the Midwest. We are September 4th. We are in Omaha. The 5th, we are in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The 6th, Madison, Wisconsin. The 7th, Minneapolis. And the 8th, Iowa City. And also, I'm going to Russia the end of September. So if anyone's in Moscow, hit me up.
Might be. We might have some fans.
You never know. And then
definitely some expats.
You have to have expats. And then Rob Placone and I are doing a progressive comedy tour in Australia in November.
Oh, that'll be fun.
We have November 15th confirmed in Adelaide and November 22nd in Perth confirmed. Those ticket links, although they're at grahamelwood.com, and we should have the 14th in Melbourne and the 17th in Sydney. I should have those ticket links very soon. So come see us down under.
Great. And I wanted to mention, I still have the Long Ago and Far Away. The hard copies are at comedyfilmers.com. If you just want digital, those are on Comixology. And I'll be launching a new Kickstarter for the next project very soon, within the next month or two at the latest. But that will be called Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, which will be like a Big Trouble in Little China type comic book. And it'll be the same team. It'll be Fernando Pinto and Troy Petrie. And it'll be a nice graphic novel or possibly broken up into 7 issues. So we'll see. But I will keep you guys posted. And I want to thank you guys for all the support for the first one and hope you will come back for the second one.
That's our show. Thank you, Aaron Brungart, for spinning the ones and twos and jumping on mic.
Sure, sure. By the way, Vin Diesel's real name is Mark Sinclair.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious starring Mark Sinclair.
Yes. Yeah. From his boarding school up in Princeton.
It does sound like a boarding school name. Oh, God. Of the Hampton Sinclairs?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. He drives so fast.
Yes. He's always angry.
He's so angry. Stop wearing tank tops, Mark. We're going to a dinner.
Yes. You don't have to bring dumbbells everywhere.
Can you please stop wearing those big chains around your neck, Mark?
And my God, we got you a speech therapist. Stop mumbling. Oh,
dress more like your brother.
Yeah.
He does have a fraternal
twin. He's slow and happy.
What's that?
He does have a fraternal twin. Which if it wasn't fraternal, I'd be like, well, get that guy in the Triple
What's
X
his name?
Movies.
Trevor? Trevor Sinclair? Oh, fantastic. All right, guys. Enjoy yourselves at the movies. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Mark Sinclair.